on July 19th, you may think you're flying the battleground into St. Louis, Missouri, but what you have, my man, is a one-way, all-expenses-paid, first-class ticket to Suplex City, bitch! Suplex City. Suplex City.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
I'm fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Thanks to Taylor May for putting together that little Suplex City intro for us here. You know, 17 years ago tomorrow, I attended my very first live Raw, Continental Airlines Arena, East Rutherford, New Jersey, which later became the Izod Center, which is no more as of this year. Luxury box seats, got to meet Mick Foley and Owen Hart up there, Shawn Michaels' first appearance on TV since WrestleMania 14. Undertaker nearly got his face burned off during his entrance. You know, people think the first time he got burned and almost died was that pyro accident at the Elimination Chamber show back in 2010. But they would be wrong. It was this show. Go back on the network if they didn't edit the thing out. It's a very first match. It's a very, very scary moment. One of those moments you don't forget. And it was 17 years ago to the day tomorrow, July 13, 1998. I think that's pretty cool. This is episode 391 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, July 12, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. Audible is still offering a deal to listeners of the Sound Off. If you haven't already taken advantage of it, get right on that. Audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. That's our custom URL because we're so special. If you put that URL in, you sign up. They are offering a 30-day trial of the Audible service. Over 180,000 different audiobook titles for you to choose from. Many wrestling books, many non-wrestling books. You pretty much have the pick of the litter as far as what you want to download once you have signed up. Because you can cash in one free audiobook. That means that if you should cancel at any point during your trial so as not to be billed, you get to keep your free audiobook no matter what. It's a pretty cool deal. So audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. Make sure you put our URL in. You have to go through the whole sign-up process and then cash in your book or else it won't count, and it helps the show out a little bit. So please take advantage of that if you have not already done so. And also, those of you who would like to contribute to the podcast, if you like what you hear each and every week and all the work that goes into this little deal here, you can make a PayPal donation on thesolemonster.com. The PayPal box is always parked there on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here at the top of the show. $30 or more will get you that same shout-out and nickname, plus a very brief plug for your own podcast or YouTube channel. Just make sure you include that information when you make the donation. Or if you're going to email it to me separately, make sure it's in all caps in that subject line so I know exactly what it's for. Thank you to James Hollywood Henderson, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, Jerome You're Going Down Eugenio, Russell the Muscle, Rick Mayhem Beloy, the Carolina Panther, Bradley Gooch, and All-Star Aki Honkanen. Hope I pronounced that right. Thank you to everybody, all you guys who made a donation this week to the show. Very much appreciated. I didn't mention this last week because I hadn't seen the show yet, but I finally watched that New Japan Dominion show. That finish to AJ Styles and Kazuchika Okada in the main event was unreal. Just two of the best in the world out there doing their thing. Just awesome. Awesome stuff. And I bring this up also because we are in the middle, speaking of free trials, I mean, not just Audible, but we are in the middle of a free trial period right now for New Japan World. And those of you who don't know what New Japan World is, it is the equivalent for New Japan Pro Wrestling of what the WWE Network is for WWE. A little bit cheaper, only slightly, roughly the same price, just a little bit cheaper. But if you go on NJPWWorld.com, first of all, I hope you know Japanese. But if you don't know Japanese, they actually do have a button. It's either on the bottom of the page or the top of the page. But there is a language translate button for English, and it does a pretty good job of translating the pages into English. So you should be able to understand what you're reading when you're on the website. I would urge you to sign up for their free trial. They're offering a free trial of the service through July 18th, which I believe is next Saturday. So if you want to sign up for the trial, you will not be billed. You have to give them a credit card, but you won't be billed as long as you cancel. I don't know why you would, but if you wanted to cancel before the trial is over so you don't get billed by the New Japan folks, you just have to cancel before the 18th. And if you sign up now, you know, you can get access to the entire Dominion event from last week. It's like almost four hours long. Just tons of awesome matches. And it's worth it for the main event alone. So if you've been on the fence about it, if you've never seen New Japan, if you want to know how can I watch New Japan, I have people asking me questions like this all the time. Take advantage of this free trial period. It's only good for another week or so, a little less than a week. I would definitely take advantage of that and check out what they have. Not even just the Dominion show. I mean, they have practically their own entire library up for you to browse through. Tons of great matches. So definitely check that out. NJPWWorld.com. I give it a high recommendation. There are a couple stories that you guys wanted me to talk about. One of them being the leaked announcer memos that came out this week. The announcing instructions from WWE production on what the announcer should and should not say and how they should act on the air and all that stuff. I don't really have anything to say about it because it's old news. I don't know why or how it bubbled up just now. I'm pretty sure I've seen these before or maybe something similar. But these memos clearly date back to probably 2008, 2009. They're at least 5 or 6 years old. I don't really see what the news is in them. I mean, we've known for a long time that Vince McMahon is a crazy man, and he micromanages his announcers. He's in their ear. We've had people who have been announcers in WWE who have left because they couldn't take it anymore. That's just how Vince is. And that's not to say that some of the stuff outlined in these memos about, you know, being prepared and acting a certain way and don't assume the audience knows this or that and let them know. Like, there are some, actually, there's a lot of stuff in those memos that does make sense, that do make sense, and it's not all, you know, gobbledygook, but there's so many things in there, just these random, just inane things that don't matter, and it's like pages and pages and pages worth of this stuff, and it does give you, I guess, to some degree, a new appreciation for what these announcers go through, which is not to say they do a wonderful, fantastic job every week, because they don't. And how do you measure that? How do you measure the effectiveness of your wrestling announcers? Well, do you buy into what you're seeing? Do they do a good job of selling you on the big events and on the pay-per-views? And I think the answer, by and large, is no. And so I feel bad for them. A guy like Michael Cole, who does work hard, and I think we saw with the Tokyo show, Michael Cole can be a very good announcer. He's had flashes of brilliance and greatness here and there. But at the same time, if Michael Cole was so great, he would take what, you know, he's dealt. He would take the card he's dealt, and he would make it work. And I feel like more often than not, he's not able to make it work. So, you know, I feel bad for these guys. I have, you know, I have an appreciation for what they do, but that doesn't mean that they are doing a bang-up job out there. But just the pages and pages worth of stuff. I mean, who can memorize all that stuff? All the little nonsense BS things that these guys are, you know, forced to remember to say this, don't say that. It's not a belt, it's a title, and it's, you know, we can't use the word hatred. And the funny thing is, again, these memos go back a number of years, so there's a lot of stuff in them that is no longer accurate. You know, they're using certain words on TV now, like five-star match and stuff like that, that apparently were banned many years ago. So some of this has changed. I think overall, though, it's probably very much the same as far as, you know, these guys are being micromanaged to death. And I think it's the blame lies on Vince McMahon's shoulders. It really, it's his product. You know, he's the boss. He makes the rules. He's on headset. He's in their ear. So if you don't like what you're hearing on commentary every week, you know, we could say that JBL is not doing a good job. He's overbearing. And Michael Cole isn't as good as he can be. And Byron Saxton is just there. He's kind of like a corpse, you know, sitting there at ringside. We can say all of those things. But at the end of the day, the blame lies on Vince McMahon. And I don't think anything's going to change as long as he insists on micromanaging these guys. But other than that, there really isn't any breakthroughs here, because we've known this for how many years now? I don't really see where the real news is here. The other thing is also the Steve Austin, Roddy Piper stuff. So this is such a weird thing. So here's the deal, because I know some of you guys kind of sort of have heard what's going on, but not everybody knows, and they're asking me. And so I went and I listened to the podcast that Roddy Piper recorded many months ago after WrestleMania. And he had on Will Sasso. Will Sasso is an actor. He's a comedian. He used to be on Mad TV, big wrestling fan. He's actually been on WCW shows before and WWE shows before, including, I think he did a segment once with Steve Austin. And Will Sasso does a tremendous Steve Austin impersonation. He does, I think, multiple impersonations, but he does, I think, a really, really good impersonation of Stone Cold Steve Austin. So Piper had Will Sasso on his podcast, but he promoted it as Steve Austin coming on. Again, this would have been right after WrestleMania. He didn't say, well, we're going to have comedian Will Sasso on portraying Steve Austin. He made it sound like he had Austin on his show. And I listened to the whole thing because Piper has left Podcast One. He claimed or implied that he was fired, that Steve Austin got him fired. He wasn't happy with the show. I guess when the show went up all those months ago in April, it was pulled after 6 hours. And Piper is now no longer part of Podcast One. He uploaded the show to SoundCloud. So that's how I listened to the show. I downloaded it from SoundCloud. I haven't listened to a Roddy Piper podcast since he probably first started one, because I couldn't handle it. But I said, I'll listen to this one. And I actually thought Will Sasso, for his part, was actually pretty funny. I did laugh at some of the parts. Once I was done listening to the podcast, I knew exactly what happened here. I knew exactly why Steve Austin was upset. I didn't need people to tell me this. I didn't need to read or, oh, why is Steve Austin upset? I wonder what Steve Austin has to say about it. I knew exactly what happened. And sure enough, Austin on his recent podcast, one of his recent podcasts, he, at the very end of the show, he took a few minutes, very low key. Clearly, he didn't want to talk about this, but he addressed the situation. And he said, look, he didn't deny the fact that when the show went up, he had an issue with it and that he requested it be taken down. That did happen. And Podcast One acquiesced. They said, absolutely, we'll take the show down. But Austin did not get Piper fired from Podcast One. I don't know where Piper is pulling this out, what orifice of his body he is pulling this from. But this is Roddy Piper. He's not all there, so we have to just remember that. He claims he was fired. Austin says he wasn't fired. I certainly didn't get him fired. Not only is he not fired, but Austin exchanged emails with the president of Podcast One and was told that, you know, Piper was the one who requested that he leave. Piper took a meeting with the president of Podcast One. This would have been, I guess, a few months ago. And said, listen, I've got other projects to do, offers, movies, whatever, and I would like to leave. And they said, okay. And they let him go, and Piper walked out. Roddy Piper basically quit on his own. He was not fired. He was not forced out of Podcast One. And according to Austin, as far as he knows, he said the offer is still there. If Piper wants to come back to Podcast One, he's more than welcome to come back. But for now, they took all of his shows down. He's now uploading, I guess, shows to SoundCloud, and he's making it seem like he's the victim here. But what happened is, so to go back to the point, I listened to the Piper podcast, and I knew right away what the problem was and why Austin wanted the show taken down. I suppose Austin could have been upset that it was promoted as though he was on the show and people might be misled, but I don't think that had anything to do with it. What it was, and Austin admitted as much on his own show, he said that, you know, with Sasso and the impersonation, they got a little too personal, because you remember that whole, you know, the whole story about, oh, there's heat between Steve Austin and WWE, and Austin denied it and said, I have no heat with them, this is all rumors and BS. But then there were other people, sources who were backstage at WrestleMania, who said not only was he supposed to be there, and people were of the impression that Austin was going to be at WrestleMania this year, they had a locker room with his name on it, waiting for him, and he never showed up. So whatever the miscommunication was here, I guess it wasn't heat from Austin. He didn't intentionally no-show. But somebody there thought he was going to be at WrestleMania, and he wasn't. And so Piper played off of that on the podcast, because Piper went by all the online news reports. And so he's talking to Will Sasso, and he's saying, oh, you know, you didn't show up at WrestleMania. And they played off the whole no-show thing. And then they were kind of mocking Austin for it. I mean, again, tongue-in-cheek, it was done for comedy. But as soon as they started talking about that stuff, I said to myself, that's it. That's exactly why Austin had the show taken down. Because that was, you know, that was a big deal to Austin. That was something that blew up that he probably was hoping would just go away, and he didn't think there was anything to it. He didn't want problems to be created between him and WWE. And here's Roddy Piper having a Steve Austin impersonator on his show, you know, mocking him for the fact. And Piper multiple times dropped little, you know, funny comments about, oh, that's right, you weren't there. Oh, that's right, you weren't at WrestleMania, like almost mocking him for it. And I knew right away, I said, well, there you go, there's your answer. And, I can understand why Austin would be upset about that. I don't think Austin is a stick in the mud who can't take a joke, but when you bring up a personal situation like that, and maybe there was some tension for a while between him and the company. In fact, I'm sure there was. I could see where that might be problematic, and he would ask for the show to be taken down. So that's what happened, and I think what ended up happening is Podcast One took the show down. That bothered Roddy a great deal. Maybe they did say something about how if this happens again, we're going to let you go. I don't know if they said that to Piper or not, but I think Piper is, you know, he's got that pride. He's a proud man. He even said on his podcast, oh, they threatened to fire me, and then he got real serious and said, nobody threatens to fire Roddy Piper, and I think he just took it upon himself to quit. That's what I think happened here. And somehow this turned into, oh, Steve Austin had Roddy Piper fired from Podcast One, which is not the case. And of the two, to be perfectly honest with you, if we're talking about Roddy Piper and Steve Austin, if I had to believe one over the other, I'll take Steve Austin's word over Roddy Piper. Piper's not all there. So that's it. I mean, that's really the whole situation. It turned into a whole dramatic thing, and, it became, as most things do on the internet, a bigger thing than it had to. There isn't much to it, and I guess if Piper wants to go back, he'll go back. But for now, he is off Podcast One. Somebody on Twitter during the week asked me for my instant card, like a practical, realistic card for WrestleMania 32, if I had to book one right now, at this moment. And, you know, I tend to hate these fantasy booking questions. I get so many emails with, like, fantasy booking scenarios, and I feel bad because I can't get back to everybody. You know, I'm looking for, like, short questions that I can answer as I'm going through different emails. And I can't tell you how many emails I get. Oh, can you map out the next 12 months of WWE if you were in? I'm like, I can't do this. I don't have time for this. But somebody asked me the question, and I got to thinking, okay, what would my top matches be at WrestleMania? And so I wanted to throw it out to you guys here as well. I tweeted this out already a few days ago, but I wanted to throw it out here on the podcast because I think this could be a good conversation starter, and I want to get your feedback. Because Steve Austin is not wrestling Brock Lesnar, I believe Austin when he says he's done. In fact, Austin has done a couple of interviews recently. He's been more declarative than I have ever heard him before. Austin has always been, well, if the money is right, and if the creative is right, and it's Texas, we can make it work. You know, it's not a matter of my body. I could do two more years if I wanted to. And he always left the door open because he's smart. He's a smart businessman. Why wouldn't you leave the door open? But this is the first time I've heard Austin recently flat out say, I'm done. You know, I retired in 2003. My final match was with The Rock. I have no reason to come back. I'm done. Even though they made him the cover boy for 2K16... and all that, and that got people talking, ooh, this must mean that Austin's wrestling in WrestleMania. No, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything at all. And a lot of this video game stuff doesn't even have much in the way of anything to do with WWE creative. You know, it's something that 2K does on its own, WWE approves it, and that's it. You know, people made a big deal about Sting last year. Ooh, Sting is the big cover boy for, I think, 2K15. And they did that great commercial with the orchestra and his old theme music before they went and changed it. But it wasn't a sign that, ooh, Sting is coming in imminently, right? Sting didn't come in for many more months. It had nothing to do with anything, even though Sting did wrestle at Mania. But don't think that one has anything to do with the other. For everybody who's, you know, getting their pants wet here that Austin is wrestling at Mania, I don't believe he is. And so then there's Dana White. Dana White, president of the UFC, has made it very clear he's not going to let Ronda Rousey wrestle, even though she desperately wants to, at WrestleMania next year. Because I, you know, from what I understand, they wanted to do singles matches with Rock against Triple H and Stephanie against Ronda Rousey, or at least a mixed tag. Maybe Rock and Rousey against Triple H and Stephanie, which would be an awesome match. But Dana White said no. So Ronda Rousey will not be wrestling. And I don't think Undertaker and Sting is something that Vince McMahon wants to do. So, with all three of those things in mind, and I know there are some holes in this. This is not perfect. You know, where does Sting fit in if he wrestles at all next year? Which I believe he will. And other guys like Sheamus, who's got the Money in the Bank briefcase, Bray Wyatt, even Daniel Bryan, if he's able to come back. I know there's a lot of holes in this, but taking all that and putting it aside, this is the card I came up with. We have the WWE Championship, which I don't believe will headline the show next year. I think it'll be... And we've seen a few WrestleManias where the title match does not go on last. I think next year will be one of those years. But I think the most appropriate championship match to go with is a match that some people thought might happen this past year, and it didn't. It's a match we still have not seen. Since the Shield broke up, we have yet to see a three-way match with all three guys of the ring together, just them. Not a fatal four-way with Randy Orton in there or somebody else in there, just a triple threat match with Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Roman Reigns. And I think it would make sense to do that as a championship match next year at WrestleMania. You know, and I know some people are sick to death of seeing Seth Rollins, and he's not exactly lighting the world on fire in the ratings on Raw. But these three guys, let me tell you something about these three guys. Think about where WWE would be. Think about where Monday Night Raw, 3 hours of this stuff, week to week, where that show would be if there was no Shield. If these guys had not been put together, if these guys had not been called up, and everything played out the way that it did, where would WWE be right now without these three guys? Do you know, these three guys were the MVPs of that show for all of 2013, and a good part of 2014 as well, before they broke him up. And even after they broke him up, everything, I mean, every segment is Seth Rollins and the Authority. Some of them have Dean Ambrose, and then they'll push him down the card a little bit. Roman Reigns, he's going to be the next Golden Boy, right? Everything is focused and centered around these three guys. When they were together having six-man tags every week, it was the best part of the show. And I said to myself, if these guys were not there, what the hell would happen? What would they do? What would Raw be each week without those Shield six-man matches in all of 2013? And in 2014, the stuff with the Shield and the Wyatt family, that was some of the best stuff they've done in the last few years. Those three guys were the glue holding that whole show together. So it would be appropriate, I think, for the three of them to be in the spotlight, as much as they've helped carry this company for a few years now. And some people would say, well, things aren't so great now, so what does that say about the Shield guys? Well, think about where things would be without the Shield guys. Think about how much worse it would be without those three guys, especially when they were teaming up. So I have no problem putting them in the championship match and giving them the spotlight in the main event of WrestleMania. I think it would be appropriate, even though I don't think that would be the real main event. The real main event on my card, and probably on the real card too, by the way, would be The Rock against Triple H. And as far as Steve Austin, he may not be wrestling, but I think the most appropriate thing for him to do, probably, given you know how connected to the Attitude Era he is with Rock and with Triple H, is make Austin the special referee for a Rock vs. Triple H match. Rock vs. Triple H is a match we saw a gazillion times back in the day, but we haven't seen it since 2002. It would actually be a fresh match in some ways. And both guys are... you know, are in very different places now in their life than they were back then. 2002, on Raw, that was the last time we saw a singles match between The Rock and Triple H. And so I would have no problem at all doing that match. I think that'd be a big match. I think John Cena and The Undertaker, if you're not doing Sting and Undertaker, I think John Cena is the best opponent for The Undertaker. And I think there's a better chance of that match happening than the Sting match. Now, again, it's a few years too late. The best time to have done it would have been when Undertaker was still undefeated at WrestleMania. Then you've got the drama of people thinking, oh my God, Cena's going to be the one to break the streak, even though he isn't. So it's you know, lost a little bit of that edge that it would have had, but you can still do the match. You could do Undertaker against John Cena, and it would still be a big match. Again, that's a match we also haven't seen in many, many years. Brock Lesnar, what do you do with Brock? I really don't think they're putting the title back on Brock, at least not, you know, WrestleMania next year. I don't think Brock Lesnar will be the champion. But, you know, he's got the big contract. He's here for another, what, 3 years? He's got to be in a big match of WrestleMania. He deserves to be in a big match of WrestleMania. I'd love for him to be in the main event. I just, you know, can't... Unless you do Rock and Brock or Rock and Austin and Brock, I don't see what other main event show-ending match you could put Brock in. But I think Brock Lesnar against Randy Orton as one of the top matches on the card would be a perfectly fine choice. There's a match we've never seen before. We didn't see it in 2000, at least not on TV back. I mean, maybe Orton and Brock and OVW had a match or something, but on TV, it's a match we've never seen before. Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar, I think that could turn out to be a pretty kick-ass match myself. And it's a fresh opponent for Brock. That's the one critique I have of his run so far, is that we haven't seen him in the ring with enough fresh opponents. The thing I loved about the Kofi Kingston match in Tokyo, which went all of 2.5 minutes, as it should have, but I liked it because just the visual of Brock being in there with somebody you would never expect him to be in the ring with, and then promptly murdering that person. That's the appeal of Brock Lesnar. Now, Brock Lesnar is not going to murder Randy Orton, but it's a fresh face for him to go in there with. And Randy, you know, when Randy Orton's motivated and he's in there with a great opponent, he's, you know, I mean, I thought him and Rollins this year at WrestleMania had a great match, and that freaking awesome finish. You know, when Orton's in there with the right opponent, he can have a great match. So Orton versus Lesnar would be my choice. And you round things out as far as like the top matches, top 4 or 5 matches, with Kevin Owens, who I think Kevin Owens is not going to be in the WrestleMania main event next year. One day maybe, but not next year. But he does deserve, I think, if he can keep this momentum up, to be in a feature match on the show, even if it opens the show. And I think the perfect match for him next year, provided that this other guy can come back from injury, and I think he will, and I think he will promptly be promoted to the main roster. Which he would have been, because that spot that Kevin Owens got back in May when he got promoted to the main roster, that was supposed to go to Sami Zayn. And then Sami got hurt, and boy, did Kevin Owens take advantage of that. But Sami Zayn's out. He was at the Comic-Con event. They did an NXT panel. He said that he expects to be back late 2015, maybe early 2016 from his injury. Perfect timing. Royal Rumble, right around the corner. You can do an angle. He has not gotten his revenge on Kevin Owens for what happened to him. And like I said, I expect Sami Zayn, once he comes back, to be on Raw and SmackDown not too long after he comes back. He's got a ready-made feud waiting for him with Kevin Owens. And the idea that these two guys have yet to have the kind of match that I know they can have together, because I've seen them do it before. They can have a main event level match. To be able to do that match for the first time, and not have a match where it's just an angle, a non-finish, like a real match. Give these guys, you know, 15 minutes to go out there and do their thing at a WrestleMania. I think it'd be a hell of a way to open the show. There have been some great show opening matches before. Bret and Owen, Eddie and Ray, Triple H and Bryan. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, I think, could open the show next year and tear down the house. And it's a match that makes sense because it's a ready-made feud. It makes storyline sense to do that match. So those would be my key matches for WrestleMania 32. And then you got to flesh out the rest of the card with the U.S. title, or the tag team titles. The Divas will have a match. They'll have the Andre Battle Royal. But that to me, I think, is a pretty good, doable, realistic top of the card. So what do you guys think? You know, I'd want to hear from you guys and what you think about that card, and if there's little changes you would make, what your card would look like. I think given the circumstances, that's the best possible card, top of the card, that you could do if you want to sell as many tickets as possible to fill that stadium in Dallas, which they're not going to do. I'm telling you that right now. Any realistic, practical card they pull off, they're not selling out that stadium. Okay, I readily admit, even with that card I just ran down, it's not strong enough to fill the entire building. They could do 75,000 people, but they're not doing 95 or 100,000. They don't have any realistic attraction to make that happen. The only way they could even come close to pulling those numbers legit would be to headline with Austin in Texas. Okay, you can call it one last stand if you want to. Against Brock Lesnar, if you want to do that Texas death match they were teasing, you put that in the main event. Okay, you have that mixed tag match underneath that they wanted to do with Rock and Rousey against Triple H and Stephanie. You could do that underneath. Okay, and for the hardcore fan base, because the mainstream fans aren't going to give a shit about this, but for the hardcore fan base, you can do The Undertaker against Sting in a double retirement match. Doesn't even matter who you put in the championship match. I mean, it's kind of sad to think, but to the mainstream audience, it wouldn't matter. Wouldn't matter who you put in that match. You headline with those three matches, and maybe you can fill that stadium with 90,000 people. So I just want to make that clear. I don't think they have a big enough attraction right now to do it, since those matches I just mentioned just now are very unlikely to happen. But I do think I've laid out the best possible card given what they have, available to them. Let me know what you think. Raw this past Monday night was live from Chi-Town, Chicago, Illinois. Brock was back, which you knew meant doom for J&J's new Cadillac. Paul Heyman wheeled over a crate full of death instruments, and Brock pulled out not one. Okay, one would be scary enough. Not one, but two axes. The sight of Brock Lesnar alone, weaponless, is enough to scare small children and grown men. The sight of Brock Lesnar with two axes in his hands is enough to make you leave a brown stain on your shorts. Lesnar just absolutely destroyed this car. He smashed out the windows. You know, my biggest fear, I'm watching this whole thing, and my biggest fear was that this guy's going to hurt himself the way that Goldberg did in WCW when he punched the limo window with his fist, suffered all that nerve damage in his hand, put him out for months. You know, either that or one of the axes I thought was going to ricochet back into his face and just split his head open. So I cringed every time this guy, he just hit the car with such force. It was just, I was waiting for something bad to happen. And as it turned out, it kind of did. J&J came after him with axe handles as weapons, and they were quickly disposed of. Poor Jamie Noble had his arm broken, kayfabe, of course, in the Kimura lock. But then he fell on the floor, and I guess he cut up his back legit on all of the glass from the windows that had been broken out. And he posted a photo online of a nasty, stitched-up gash. This guy needs to stay the hell away from Brock Lesnar whenever he sees him. Just turn around and walk in the opposite direction. That would be my advice. Joey Mercury, he did not fare much better. He got suplexed, belly-to-belly style, onto the hood of the car. Not even the fans were spared by Brock Lesnar's rage. He ripped off the car door, one of the car doors. He hurled it. He hurled this door far enough that the car door itself, I don't think, reached the crowd. I think it fell a little short. It came close, but it fell short. It was the interior panel that separated from the door, and that hit a little kid in the crowd. And the idiots that were sitting on either side of this kid seemed completely oblivious and unconcerned that this kid got hit. They were too busy celebrating this piece of car that they had just caught. Even after they caught it, they were, they were smiling and jumping. Meanwhile, this poor kid clearly got hit, and nobody seemed to notice, but somebody posted video of it, and I had to watch the video. I admit, I had to watch it about six times before I finally could see what happened. I think the problem was I was watching it on my 4-inch phone, and it was like, I don't see anything. And then when I went on my laptop, I'm like, oh, there it is. This kid got nailed. Thankfully, he wasn't hurt too bad. They took him backstage, gave him a shit ton of merchandise, and I'm sure he got to meet a bunch of the wrestlers. And then he went back to his seat. So, you know, WWE will be lucky if the parents don't file suit against them. That's the thing to do in this country now, in case you didn't know. If you look at someone the wrong way, they'll file a lawsuit against you, claiming your voodoo powers caused their neck to start hurting them. And then they'll want $500,000 for their pain and suffering. You know, for a country that loves to think it's so tough, you'd be amazed at how many little sissies we've got running around here. But hey, Michael Cole sued Brock Lesnar, right? And he got a settlement out of it. So why the hell not? Surprise, surprise, we got Photoshop pictures of Kane on his Hawaiian vacation. Could they possibly be any more lazy? How hard would it be to send a camera crew with Kane to a frickin' beach? Send him to a beach, pretend that it's Hawaii, and just film some comedy skits. Even if it's not comedy, if it's literally just Kane in his Hawaiian shorts with a lei around his neck, laying on the beach, sipping a frickin' fruity drink. That's all you gotta do. I mean, if you're gonna do these awful storylines, at least put a little effort into them. Is that too much to ask? I told you last week what was gonna happen. And sure enough, there are these crappy Photoshops. I don't know if they're supposed to be funny. Are they? What is the point of the Photoshops? Because I certainly didn't laugh. Randy Orton is back. Now an engaged man. You'd think he'd learn his lesson after the first time. Yeah, people can dump on John Cena all they want. The guy's got the right idea. You know, you're on the road all the time. You're doing what these guys do for a living, which is hard. You know, it's hard to live that kind of lifestyle. But you're still young, you're living it up. Why get married? John Cena doesn't want to get married. Yeah, maybe in 5 years, 10 years, but not now. But then again, I mean, nobody has the schedule that John Cena has. So for him, it kind of makes sense. Why would the guy get married? And plus, again, he's been burned before, too. So it looks like he learned his lesson. Cena is 38 now, I will say. He's kind of at that age where, you know, I would expect something to happen soon. Orton's only 35. He's already been divorced. Just enjoy it, man. Just take the time to enjoy it. It doesn't last forever. But I wish him well, though. He attacked Sheamus after his match with Roman Reigns, which had another shitty non-finish, just like their first match. Or was that their second match? They had a match on SmackDown, too, didn't they? Did the SmackDown match come first? I think it did. So this would have been the third match these guys have had. And someone dressed as Bray Wyatt came out. Reigns went to attack him in the aisleway before he realized it wasn't Bray Wyatt at all. It was somebody dressed up as Bray Wyatt, and he got counted out. And then Orton came out. He laid out Sheamus with an RKO. So there's your match for Battleground. God help us all. We had another Rusev, Summer Rae, Dolph Ziggler, Lana segment. My favorite part was the crowd booing, and Rusev yells at them, "I give you summer!" Like we can thank him for all the warm weather that we've been having. Rusev the weather god could be his new gimmick. So I guess next he'll be making it rain. Anyway, Rusev revealed that his injured ankle is now healed when he attacked Dolph Ziggler, brutally attacked Dolph Ziggler, took his walking boot off. He destroyed Ziggler with his crutch. He jammed the crutch up into Dolph's throat, and Dolph had to be helped out. So the storyline now is that Ziggler suffered an injured trachea. He will be out indefinitely. So maybe he hasn't signed that new contract that WWE offered him. He should consult, though, I would say, with Dean Ambrose on how to recover quickly from a trachea injury. Ambrose had the same thing happen to him on a Thursday. Or maybe it was Friday. This may have been before SmackDown moved. But in any event, he had this happen on a Friday, let's say. And by Monday, he was back on TV, showing no ill effects. So I would give Ambrose a call. The New Day beat the Lucha Dragons. And yes, Kofi Kingston was out there wrestling. And I'm watching this, and Kofi's clapping on the way down to the ring. Big smile on his face. Would it have killed them to keep Kofi off the show this week? To sell the beating that Brock Lesnar gave him in Tokyo 2 days earlier? It wasn't even a week. It was 2 days. You've got a mid-card stable with three men. Three! One of whom got dropped on the back of his neck by the scariest man on the planet and then got not one but two F5s. You've still got two other members of that group who they didn't suffer quite as badly as Kofi did. They got beaten up, but they didn't get the beating that Kofi did, okay? Those guys, Xavier and Big E, they can wrestle the match. You can still do this match. Not only was Kofi back, but he wrestled in the match. Xavier was on the outside. Am I the only one who was bothered by this? I realize I shouldn't let it get to me. It's a minor thing. But it's so simple. They totally could have done the exact match and kept one of those guys off the show. And I'll do you one better. This is the other reason why it bothers me. You tell people, if you want to see what happened to Kofi Kingston and why he's not here this week, buy the network and watch the Tokyo show. It's the best commercial you could possibly do for your network. You can use it as a way to maybe, you know, pick up a few new subscribers who want to see Brock Lesnar murder Kofi Kingston. But I guess that's too complicated. Anyway, Titus O'Neil was the real star of the segment here. The primetime players were out there doing commentary since they are defending their titles against New Day at Battleground next weekend. Titus was awesome. Awesome. Especially when he started railing on JBL for talking about Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins had fled. When Brock Lesnar got done destroying J&J in the car, he ran after Seth. Actually leaped up onto the apron. Now, we know Brock's vertical leaping ability is pretty good. But not only did Brock jump up onto the apron, in like one fluid motion, he then jumped over the top rope into the ring. I made the joke on Twitter. It kind of reminds me, I'll never forget the day there was a water bug in my apartment. And I don't do well with that stuff at all. And I saw the water bug, which is like a giant tank with legs, if you've never seen one. Think of a roach, but worse. And this thing is on the wall. It's on one of the walls in the bedroom. And I'm frozen in fear as I'm staring at this thing, thinking, how the hell can I get this thing? I didn't have a vacuum cleaner at the time, otherwise I would just use the vacuum hose to suck it up. I didn't have that. I ain't going anywhere near it. So I'm thinking to myself, what can I do? I'm trying to get a little closer. And the fucking thing jumps. I shit you not. It flies. Or jumps. One or the other. From one wall to the other. I screamed, and I ran out the door. Brock Lesnar is like a water bug. In that you look at it, and it's scary. And you don't really want to go near it. But you're looking at it, and then all of a sudden, it jumps, or it flies. And it's like, holy shit, it flies. And you run in the opposite direction. Because you figure this fucking thing is going to kill you. It's just what I thought. So anyway, that was, I would imagine that was quite scary for Seth Rollins. And he dropped his axe handle, and he just bolted through the crowd and out of the building. But I bring this up because JBL was talking about Seth. There's a tag team match going on in the ring, and he's busy. Oh, Seth Rollins ran out of here earlier. I wonder, you know, boo, 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 Seth Rollins. And he's going on and on about the stupid Cadillac. And Titus just tells him, hey, instead of talking about a Cadillac, how about calling the damn match that's going on in the ring right now? I'll do your job for you, he told JBL at one point. But I thought the best part of this whole thing, JBL was taking a lot of fire. He wasn't saying much, and then he piped up and he tried to come back on Titus, and he inferred that Titus was stupid by reminding him that there's three of New Day. I don't remember the point he was trying to make, but he was mentioning that there's three of New Day, and JBL goes, you know, they had math at the University of Florida, didn't they? Which is where Titus went to college. And Titus, without missing a beat, just goes, yes, I've got 2 degrees. How many do you have? And JBL had nothing to say. And Titus says, yeah, that's what I thought. It was glorious. Glorious, this was. I could watch that every week. I don't even remember who. I guess the New Day won the match. The finish of the match doesn't. The match itself didn't even matter. It was just a backdrop to this assassination that we saw at the announce desk. Kevin Owens, now without his NXT title, came out to accept the John Cena US Open Challenge. I thought for sure it would be Cody Rhodes. I couldn't imagine who this was. They saved it for the main event. John Cena was in the main event this week. We haven't seen him in the main event in a long time. I thought it was going to be Cody, because I know Cody, I mean, supposedly he was backstage. I know on his personal Twitter account he went on and said he wasn't in Chicago. And he wasn't there. I have no reason to think he would lie. It's not like he lied and then popped up on the show. But it wasn't Cody Rhodes. Sounds like, from what I'm reading, it sounds like they're holding him out because they want more time to pass so they can bring him back with the Stardust gimmick. And people won't, you know, associate Dusty Rhodes with Cody Rhodes, and they can bring Stardust back like nothing ever happened. I think that would be about as dumb as what they did, or didn't do, I should say, with Adam Rose after that ESPN special. It's like this company is incapable of reacting to outside events. They live in their little bubble, their little universe. We have our storylines. We don't care how good or bad they are. We pay 25 writers to do this, and so fuck you. I think that's kind of their attitude. Cesaro came out and cut a promo on Kevin Owens, telling him, get lost, or else there's going to be trouble. He wants a rematch with Cena for the championship. And Kevin Owens just left. I was shocked. He didn't turn back around and attack Cesaro. He didn't interfere in the match and beat up Cesaro and cost him the title a second time from mouthing off to him. He just tucked his tail and walked to the back. And what followed was 30 minutes of a really, really good match. Again, a lot of you guys I know gave up on Raw long ago. And so every now and then I'll tell you, listen, I recommend this match, that match. You know, find it on YouTube or, you know, one of these sites, and it's worth going out of your way to watch. This is another one of those matches that's worth going out of your way to watch. It was really, really good. I can't remember the last time we even got a 30-minute match on Raw or even a pay-per-view. Usually pay-per-view main events these days don't go that long. I mean, I think the Rollins-Ambrose ladder match of Money in the Bank, I think, went 30-something minutes. But 30 minutes, you don't see too many main events going that long these days. I may be in the minority. I liked their first match better the week before. This was really good. I mean, don't get me wrong, it wasn't a bad match, but I thought that that first one was great, and this one was really good. I think I said in the first match, John Cena hit the worst springboard stunner I had ever seen. Well, he managed to top himself here. This week's stunner was even uglier than last week's Raw rating. We need to get ban the stunner going as a hashtag on Twitter. I mean, that's just the end of it. I mean, we have to. You have to speak WWE's language. They don't speak English. They speak in hashtags. I mean, so does TNA, but TNA is like an American visiting France for the first time and trying to speak the language, but just totally butchering it and fucking it up left and right. That's why their hashtags and tweets get them in trouble so often. They try to speak the language, but they do a very poor job of it. Okay, you know, WWE speaks hashtag. Hashtag ban the stunner during Raw this week. Maybe the WWE app will pick it up. I once tweeted about how boring a segment was on Raw, and the app picked it up. I have no idea why. It's some kind of algorithm, I guess. But, yeah, let's get that trending. Maybe we'll get their attention that way, because this thing has just got to go. It has to go. Cena won clean with the AA after multiple near falls, kicking out of big moves. As soon as it ended, Kevin Owens ran in, but Cena countered his powerbomb attempt into an AA, and Owens ran off. I was baffled by their booking of Kevin Owens here, but I guess they were going for the desperation angle, I guess. Owens lost his NXT title, and now he's vulnerable. He's desperate to get things back on track and win the U.S. title, which I never thought he was going to do anyway, by the way. Even before they announced the main event of that next TakeOver show that he's in. But I'll save my battleground predictions for next week. Cena did put Cesaro over huge when the show was over, off the air. There was video that leaked on YouTube. Somebody recorded it. I mean, the two of them, they train together. They're really good friends. And every time they wrestle, they have great matches. So I'm sure John Cena loves working with the guy and would have no problem putting him over. But the storyline doesn't call for that right now. Maybe at SummerSlam.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
WWE has announced that Kevin Owens will challenge Finn Balor for the NXT Championship in the main event of the August 22nd TakeOver show in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. Don't know why they're going back to that match. I mean, they had a really good match in Tokyo. I'm sure they'll have a really good match in Brooklyn. It'll be cool to see Kevin Owens in the main event in Brooklyn. I'm sure he'll get a lot of heat, but I don't know why they're going back to this match unless they have a big angle planned. It seems like this was the time for them to move on to somebody else. But I guess in storyline, Kevin Owens does get a rematch. And so they're going to do it at TakeOver. We got a BFFs reunion on NXT this past Wednesday. Charlotte volunteered her services as Sasha Banks' tag team partner against Emma and Dana Brooke, which I had predicted last week. It seemed obvious to me, especially given that Dana Brooke was kind of feuding with Charlotte and the history between Sasha and Charlotte. And so sure enough, it was Charlotte. And the BFFs got the win. Stereo finishers at the same time. Sasha Banks with the bank statement on Dana Brooke. Charlotte with the figure eight on Emma. Dana tapped out. And then after the match... Now, actually, let me go back a little bit here. So before the match, when Charlotte came out, she said something like, "You owe me." She volunteered her services, which Sasha didn't even ask her for. And then she's like, "You owe me." And Sasha was okay with that. So as soon as the match ended, Charlotte got back on the mic and said, hey, remember when I told you that you owed me? I want a title shot next week. And Sasha said, fine, you're on. So they made that match for NXT this upcoming week. They gave a full replay of the Kevin Owens-Finn Balor match from Japan on the show, which, you know, it took up a lot of time. I guess they had time to fill. It was a good match. I didn't have to see it a second time. So they replayed that. They had a backstage segment where Jason Jordan finally agreed to team up with Chad Gable next week. So they're going to be a team going forward. Solomon Crowe is back. Now he refers to himself as NXT's resident little monster. His name is Solomon, and he calls himself a monster. Where have I heard that before? I don't like where this is headed. I really don't like where this is headed. He then beat Marcus Louis, who we also have not seen in ages, who looks like, not only looks like, but he dresses like a miniature corporate Kane, this guy. Louis got a lot of offense in, too. He had a really weird, I think it was like an abdominal stretch with a claw hold to the ribs. I actually thought Solomon Crowe was going to tap out. This guy was yelling like somebody was ripping out his guts, but he got out of it. And he ended up getting the win, Crow did, with the old Brock Lock, the stretch muffler submission. I don't know if he has a name for it. Crow, here's the deal with Crow. Crow is just deader than dead. I mean, he is just like a corpse right now on NXT. He has got to be the biggest disappointment of any of the indie guys that they have signed so far who have made TV. The crowd just doesn't care when he comes out. There's nothing about the character. There's nothing about his in-ring work. There's nothing about the way he dresses or anything that stands out, to me at least. I don't know what you do with the guy. Unless you give him a complete makeover and start over again. I don't know what you do. But whatever they're doing right now is just not working at all. So they got to figure things out with this guy fast, because he's getting not quite channel-changing heat with me when he's on, but it's kind of like, oh, okay, it's this guy. And let's just get through this to get to whatever the next segment is or whatever the main event is. And I know the guy, you know, he built up a big rep on the indies. He's a really good worker. I don't know what it is, but Solomon Crowe is just deader than dead right now, and they need to do something with this guy quickly. Vaudevillains beat Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy in the main event to become the number one contenders for the NXT Tag Team titles, which is fine since I figure they're going to get their shot probably in, what, 2 weeks? 3 weeks maybe on TV? And that should pave the way for Kaz and Enzo to fight their way back into contention and hopefully win the Tag Team titles in Brooklyn at TakeOver next month, which they're nuts if they don't do. That was the show. I was pretty bored by this show, I'm not going to lie. They've been in a funk, I think, for a few weeks now. No Samoa Joe, I don't know where he was. This Wednesday, it's going to be Jordan and Gable teaming together for the very first time. Charlotte and Sasha Banks for the Women's Championship, which should be awesome. It should absolutely be the main event of the show. And we have been promised a medical update on the condition of Sami Zayn. I mentioned earlier, they had an NXT panel at Comic-Con this past week. It was moderated by William Regal. It had Sami Zayn was there, Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, and Charlotte. And Sami Zayn said he's no longer wearing his sling. He says, as you could tell, I'm no longer wearing a sling. And everybody was clapping and applauding. And without skipping a beat, Kevin Owens just goes, yay! In the most sarcastic, dickish way possible. And then Sami, he made another comment about how it would be a while before he's back. And Kevin Owens is like, aww. What a heel. Keeping kayfabe alive is Kevin Owens. I'm telling you, that's going to be a WrestleMania match next year, and it could very well open the show. I'm going to call that now. As long as Sami's able to come back and they do promote him to the main roster, which I think they'll do not too long after he comes back, it makes too much sense for them not to do that. With TNA, you know, once I heard that Dixie Carter was back on the show this week, I decided to skip it. So my thoughts on Impact this week are that I have no thoughts on Impact this week. I did see that TNA is having Tigre Uno on social media call out Donald Trump to appear, face him, I guess, on the July 22nd episode of Impact, which I think may be one of those live but not really live episodes of Impact that night, to confront Donald Trump over his remarks about Mexicans, since Tigre Uno is from Mexico. He said, if he's man enough to face me, That's what Tigre Uno said. Well, I guess it would be more like face to chest, since Tigre Uno is a tiny man. Muy pequeño. Maybe they could use this stupid angle to turn Bobby Lashley back heel again and have him attack Tigre Uno on behalf of Donald Trump. Maybe Trump can call in a favor from his old pal Bobby Lindsay. That's what he called him when he was building up that match at WrestleMania 23. My man, Bobby Lindsay. I'm like, who the fuck is Bobby Lindsay? Well, it's Bobby Lashley. But whatever. You know, they're trying to stay relevant. And then again, so is Trump. So at least they have that in common. But no joke, I cannot wait to see Donald Trump in those Republican debates. I just can't. How great is that going to be? I can hardly contain my excitement. He's like a heel wrestling manager cutting promos every time he opens his mouth. Every campaign speech is like a freaking Freddie Blassie promo or something. Look at this guy when he does a speech. And I actually linked to a rally that Trump did in Arizona yesterday. I put the video up on my Twitter because he came out to Hulk Hogan's Real American, which I thought was funny. But this guy, you know, he's like cutting promos out there, and then he'll stop and he'll talk himself up. He'll talk about how great he is and how rich he is. He's a freaking pro wrestling manager. He's doing a pro wrestling shtick. I mean, I know that's Trump, but that's what he's doing. It's awesome. Whether you like the guy or not, it's awesome. I mean, we could get at least a few more months of entertainment out of this guy before he finally flames out. It's great. I love it. One last TNA note, just to follow up on something I talked about a few weeks ago. I saw a write-up on Tyrus's appearance on a podcast where he was asked about TNA pulling him from those Global Force Wrestling house show dates and then seeing Jeff Jarrett show up back on Impact. Remember, I told you at the time, go back and watch the clip of the TNA roster sitting in the back watching Jeff and Karen's promo on TV and look at Tyrus. He never once looked up at the monitor. He just kept looking down at the floor. And I said, he's got to be furious. He's got to be just flaming mad over that whole thing. Because he had booked dates, he was going to get paid, and TNA threatened to fire him and said, you can't work those dates because they didn't like Jeff Jarrett. And believe me, they still don't like Jeff Jarrett. But then there's Jeff Jarrett on Impact, and it's, you know, Tyrus even said during the interview, he said, I was like, what the hell? And he said one of the TNA reps came up to him and said, oh, you can work his shows now. And Tyrus said, I told the guy it was very important that you get away from me right now. He says, I was hot. No shit. I could tell just by watching the guy. I'd be hot too. I still say that's one of the more egregious things that TNA has done recently. And they've done a lot of stupid shit. Probably the worst of which is not paying their people on time. By the way, I wonder if those production people have been paid yet. They said they were going to be paid by July 15th for the May 15th tapings. Well, July 15th is coming up this week, so it'll be interesting to see if those people did get paid. But, you know, to go to a guy after you had told him and told the whole roster, listen, we know we're not having a lot of shows. You guys need to work. You only get paid per appearance, so go ahead and book your own dates. As long as it's not on TV or pay-per-view or iPay-per-view, it's fine. And the guy goes and he books two dates, three dates, whatever it was, to get a payday. And TNA threatens to fire him because of some petty feud, some petty bullshit with Jeff Jarrett. And then there's Jeff Jarrett. Oh, it's okay now. Now you can go work for him. If I were Tyrus, I would have said, fuck you, and walked right out the door. I mean, I understand why he didn't want to do that. Why burn a bridge? But that's why all this stuff now with Jeff Jarrett and Dixie Carter hugging and they're reunited and they're singing the praises of Global Force Wrestling and Jeff Jarrett now doing these sit-down interviews on Impact and talking about all this stuff and how great it is to be... Oh, it makes me want to vomit. It just makes me want to retch. It's so phony. It's such bullshit. It's two desperate companies, desperate for attention, desperate to hang on, desperate to survive. They're trying. They're going to do an invasion angle. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. Yeah, I mean... You know, whatever. It just makes me sick. Austin Aries, speaking of former TNA talent, rats jumping off the ship. He is back in Ring of Honor for the first time in 5 years. He's working a show for them in Las Vegas on July 17th, so this upcoming Friday night. He is replacing Roderick Strong in the main event, which is a six-man tag team match pitting Aries, Jay Lethal, and Moose against Jay Briscoe, Kyle O'Reilly, and Dalton Castle. Right now, it's just a one-shot. This is not a full-time deal. Oh, Aries is back. He's going to be in all the main shows. It's just one date so far. It could turn into more dates. He also can still work dates for TNA. Apparently, he's open to going back and working dates for them on a per-appearance basis. But pretty cool to have Austin Aries back in ROH for the first time in 5 years. This was the first taping, the one that aired on Destination America this past week, the first of the tapings from Terminal 5 in New York City, which is a pretty cool venue. I've only been there once for a ROH show. It was back in December for Final Battle. I haven't been there for any of the recent shows. It's interesting. I mean, it's a nightclub. It's got multiple levels. It's not huge. I mean, I guess it's huge in that it goes up, but it's not like what I would consider a huge venue. But I think it works for pro wrestling. It's a unique environment. Dalton Castle with his young boys, the Tate Twins, took on Watanabe from New Japan in the opening match. Watanabe's actually been here in the U.S. for probably over a year now. But he is a New Japan star. Lots of comedy spots. Turned into a nice little match, though. Dalton Castle has his character just down pat. Very unique. Very entertaining. Very impressive deadlift German suplex to Watanabe at one point. A man much larger than he is. I feel like we've been seeing quite a few deadlift German suplex spots in wrestling lately. I don't remember seeing them at all. You know, go back like a year. And all of a sudden, I don't know, I just feel like I've seen them a lot recently. I know Adrian Neville does them. I feel like I've seen other people do it also. Dalton Castle got the win. After the match, he snaps his fingers, and the two young boys form a human chair in the ring to allow Castle to sit on them. Which sounds dirty, but was actually very funny. Silas Young, who refers to himself as the last real man, Castle beat him in that very building at the Best in the World pay-per-view a few weeks ago. He comes out, takes exception to Castle referring to himself as a real man, and he ends up being held back by officials. Of course, look, I mean, if you called yourself the last real man in pro wrestling, and this guy came out with a couple of young boys fanning him and doing the things that Dalton Castle does, you'd be upset too. So I guess that feud is not done yet. ROH matchmaker Nigel McGuinness came out in the ring to introduce the new Ring of Honor champion, Jay Lethal, and the House of Truth faction, which has the best theme music of any faction right now in all of pro wrestling. Their music is awesome. Nigel wants to know which belt Lethal is going to vacate, since I guess it's the Ultimate Warrior rule where you cannot defend both belts simultaneously. Of course, he is the ROH TV champion, has been for a long time, but now he's got the world title. So which one are you trading in here? And this catches Lethal off guard. He was not expecting this. He gets very upset. He says, I'm not giving anything up. I'm going to defend both belts, even on the same show if I have to. And he'll be defending the world title against Roderick Strong at their July 24th iPay-per-view. But next week on ROH TV, Lethal will defend his ROH TV title against Mark Briscoe. That's going to be it feels weird for me to say this because this show airs first on Sinclair stations on Saturday. So as I'm recording this show has technically already aired. But a lot of people I don't think are able to see the show. They see it on Destination America. So I'm referring to a show that will air this Wednesday when in reality it's already aired yesterday. It's very weird. I mean, it's good. It exposes more people to the product. It's just very weird. Roderick Strong came out, had a few words for Lethal, but didn't really have anything much to say before they cut away. Roddy Strong on the mic is, let's put it this way. Not as strong as his in-ring work. They call him Mr. ROH. I think he's the PWG champion also. He's a great wrestler. On the mic, not so much. Main event was a wild six-man tag team match. The Kingdom, Adam Cole and Matt Taven, who are the IWGP tag team champions right now. I'm sorry, I completely fucked that up. Adam Cole is not a tag team champion. It's Matt Taven and Michael Bennett. They are the IWGP Tag Team Champions with Maria Kanellis, who is married in real life to Mike Bennett. They teamed up with Adam Cole, former Ring of Honor champion, against Michael Elgin and Red Dragon, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. Maria got on the mic before the match. She apologized to Adam Cole for what happened at Best in the World. I believe he lost. I do remember Maria being super kicked by everybody at the finish. So she takes full responsibility for what happened as the leader of the Kingdom. And then she gives Cole a hug. So all seemed well, at least for now. Way too much action to recap here. But Red Dragon scored the win for their team, chasing the dragon to Adam Cole for the win. After the match, Adam Cole accepted a handshake from Kyle O'Reilly. And he raised O'Reilly's arm. Very un-Adam Cole-like. And then he walked out without his fellow Kingdom teammates. So clearly there is a split coming, maybe a babyface turn for Adam Cole. My one criticism of this match is that down the stretch, when it really started to get crazy with all the big moves and the near falls, and this was always my main criticism of some of those big-time ROH main events at the shows that I would attend, is that they go too far with the kicking out of the big moves when the crowd expects it to be the finish. Like, they build and they build and they build, and there's this big climax, and, like, this is the perfect moment for the match to end, and then the guy kicks out, and it goes another 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. And it gets a nice pop when it's over, but you feel like they just went a little too long. And I think that's what happened here. I mean, these guys kicked out of so much shit that should have ended this match. And then there'd be another kick out, and it's like, how could somebody kick out of that? So that when the finish does come, it almost feels underwhelming. It's like, oh, that's it? That's all it took? He hit his finish? You know, that move he hit 3 minutes ago on the 10th near fall was way better. So that's my only criticism, and I thought we had a lot of that here toward the end of this match. It was still a fun match. Good show this week. I enjoyed it. Let's see what Jay Lethal can do with the title if he can prove himself to be a top draw. He's getting the chance for the first time. Let's see if he can deliver. Lucha Underground. This was the Pentagon Jr. show, so you know it was a great episode. I can never get too much of Pentagon. It's funny, one of our listeners, I wish I had his name in front of me, but I don't. You know who you are. He was nice enough to send me an email this morning. I guess there was a wrestling show, a Lucha Libre show, at Royal Albert Hall in the UK, which is hilarious because I just got done mentioning them like a week or two ago. I said that I'd love to see WWE do more events like Beast of the East and maybe go to a venue like Royal Albert Hall, which is it's like a theater. It's not even like a wrestling arena. It's a theater. It's a very intimate building. They did one show there back in like 1991, and the British Bulldog won a big battle royal. I don't think they've been back since. I think that would make a cool venue for one of those specials, or even like an NXT special if they wanted to do their first ever global NXT only show. I think a place like Royal Albert Hall would be awesome. But I haven't seen it in years. I mean, I didn't even know for sure if it was still active, if it was still there. And somebody sent me pictures. They went to a show this weekend at Royal Albert Hall. It was a Lucha Libre show, and there were a bunch of AAA guys on the show, including guys like Pentagon from AAA, and Phoenix was there, and Sexy Star. And he got a picture with Pentagon, who looked as demonic as ever, as he was on Lucha Underground this week. It opened, the show did, with a vignette showing Pentagon speaking with his master, whose voice was dubbed. He sounded like Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget. And his face was never shown. So we still don't know who this master is that Pentagon keeps talking about. And Pentagon promised he would get his vengeance on Ian Hodgkinson. And I'm all like, who the fuck is Ian Hodgkinson? And how stupid must he be to get on Pentagon's bad side? And then I realized, okay, that's Vampiro's real name and I feel stupid. The Mac, and they call him Cage, had the first match on the show this week. Battle of the Bulls here. Two big dudes who can work. These guys can move. They can move better than some guys half their size. These two guys, these are probably two of the best examples, not just in Lucha Underground, but in all of wrestling. These guys destroy every preconceived notion that you would have of them once you actually watch them work. You know, you would look at them and you would think certain things, but then you watch them in the ring and they just blow you away. Mac won with a schoolboy. But they did have a lot of impressive stuff that led up to it. So I guess in that respect, kind of an anticlimactic finish for what they were doing in there. But one of the spots, Mac gave Cage an exploder suplex, for example, in the corner and dropped Cage right on the back of his head. I mean, it was crazy. So this was good stuff. The Mac got the win. Katrina comes up to Son of Havoc backstage. Son of Havoc was getting ready for his match later on with Mil Muertes. Ibelis interrupted them. Gets up in Katrina's face, but Katrina does her vanishing act. Kind of the lights go out. When they come back on, Ibelis ends up somehow on top of Havoc on the floor. She has Havoc mounted on the floor. Angelico walks in. He sees this, and he asks them if this means they're back together now. I hope this trio never breaks up. They need their own half-hour sitcom. I know, like, WWE was teasing a sitcom with Santino and Kozlov many years ago, and it didn't go anywhere. Actually, I think they may have filmed a pilot that has never been shown. You know what? In wrestling now, if anybody needs a half-hour sitcom, it's these three people. Vampiro conducted one of his taped sit-down interviews with Pentagon Jr. More Pentagon here. And this just sounded like a bad idea. And it was. Pentagon got up in his face. He called him a coward for not accepting his challenge. Vampiro made it very clear to him, my time is gone. My time is up, your time is now. He didn't actually use those words, but that's basically what he was saying. He said, I'm retired. This is Pentagon's time, not mine. I've got a daughter now. I'm not interested in fighting you. And Pentagon shoved him to end the segment, and Vampiro just sat there staring into the camera with this look like, I'm going to fucking kill you. This was great. This went maybe 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes maybe, and it was so much more effective than any 20-minute promo you will ever see on Monday Night Raw. And you've got plenty to choose from, because you get at least one a week. So much more effective than any 20-minute promo on Raw. You know, Jim Ross likes to talk about guys maximizing their minutes. That's one of those JR-isms he loves to throw out there a lot. Maximize your minutes. One thing Lucha Underground does very well, and they have to because it's only an hour show, is they maximize their minutes. And that's one of the great things I like about this show, and what makes it such an easy watch. Mil Muertes and Son of Havoc had a match. Early on, I think it was Stryker who pointed out that Havoc had an advantage, which he did in the early going. And Vampiro just goes, yeah, well, Mil Muertes has an I hate you and want you to die advantage. That was a shoot. Muertes did gain the advantage. He was just killing Havoc on the outside. He powerbombed him on that wooden announce desk that has absolutely no give to it. Threw him into the bleacher seats, knocked all the chairs over as the fans scattered like frickin' Godzilla was marching through the crowd. Fast forward to the end of the match. Son of Havoc missed the shooting star press. Ivelisse and Katrina got into an argument outside the ring, and Katrina nailed Ivelisse with the stone that she carries around. I guess it's part of the rubble from the earthquake that Mil Muertes survived as a young child. So she walloped Ivelisse with it and knocked her out. The disciple dudes in the skull masks, they showed up. They took out Angelico. Havoc did a crazy dive out to the floor, taking out all the skull people. Got back in the ring and got speared to death by Mil Muertes, who then finished him off with the flatliner. Lick of death from Katrina to Havoc after the match. I have to say, you know, at the risk of sounding like a guy, Katrina's cleavage is just absolutely distracting, which is what it's designed to be. I'm not complaining. But I watch this woman, and I can't take my eyes off her. And that's a big part of why. She's just all out there. I still say Alexa Bliss is the most gorgeous, you know, diva, woman, whatever you want to call them in wrestling. On any roster right now, she's very pretty. And Katrina is probably the most spellbinding. I think that's a great word for it. She is just spellbinding. Actually, it fits the character, too. Tejano cut a promo in the ring in broken English, talking about how he hates Chavo Guerrero. Yeah! The crew came out, they attacked him. Blue Demon Jr. ran down to make the save. The crew threw him a chair, and he nailed Tejano in the head with it for the swerve. Heel turn for Blue Demon Jr. I will say this, though. Chair shots to the head and intergender singles matches are two things we need to see less of in Season 2. So, the chair shot busted open Tejano. Demon gets on the mic and says, I am Mexico, not Tejano. And he says the two of them are going to meet at Ultima Lucha. We also learned on this show that Drago is going to meet Hernandez in a match at Ultima Lucha. We already know Mil Muertes is challenging Prince Puma for the Lucha Underground title on that show. And, of course, Alberto El Patron is going to wrestle Johnny Mundo. Speaking of which, the main event was Team Alberto, Sexy Star, Aerostar, Drago, and El Patron against Team Johnny. Not to be confused with Team Johnny from WrestleMania 28 in the epic Team Johnny versus Team Teddy match. Team Johnny consisted of Superfly, Hernandez, Jack Evans, and Johnny Mundo. This was the first ever 8-man tag in Lucha Underground history. The show's been on the air for almost a year now, and it's hard to believe they've never had an 8-man tag, but this is the first time. I think because we get so many of these on Raw, they're always doing tag team matches on Raw. It's like the legacy of Teddy Long lives on now in the heart and soul of WWE. But this is the first time we saw one of these in Lucha Underground. Turned into a really good match. It felt a little off at the beginning. I don't know, you know, like these guys. It was a little rough around the edges, but they steadied the ship. Mundo got the win for his team by pinning Sexy Star. We then came to the end of the show, or what appeared to be the end of the show. The credits are rolling. Stryker and Vampiro at the announce desk. Stryker's telling us that next week there's going to be a confrontation between Mil Muertes and Prince Puma. And as he's telling us this, Pentagon Jr. comes out from the crowd, sneaks up behind the announcers, and gives Vampiro a swift kick to the back of the head. Knocks his headset off. Stryker throws his headset down and disappears. We never saw him again. Pentagon beats up Vampiro, hits him in the back with a chair, and then he grabs a can of gasoline, and he douses Vampiro with it. He also got some of the fans in the front row. He grabs a lighter, says that if Vampiro does not accept his challenge to a match at Ultima Lucha, his family and his fans are going to watch him burn. But then he says he's going to give him 1 week. Una semana to make his decision. And that's how they went off the air. This was a great angle. This was so great. How is this guy not a bigger star in AAA is what I want to know. I mean, I know he's a name down there. I think he may be like a tag team champion or something, but he's not like the top heel or one of the top heels, I think, in the company. How is that possible? How is this guy not a bigger star in AAA? He should be one of their top heels down there right now. This guy is awesome. So I can't wait to see the next chapter in this angle. Never thought I would like a Vampiro angle so much. I was never a fan of Vampiro. Vampiro, I know, had a cup of coffee in WCW. He had a match with Sting. He might have actually beaten Sting. But I know he had a feud with Sting. I just was never a Vampiro fan. He never did anything for me. I'm a bigger Vampiro fan now. The guy's almost 50 years old. Got a lot of medical problems. He's an announcer. But I'm digging Vampiro now more than I ever have at any point in the guy's career. I think he's awesome. Eric Van Wagenen, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, or Wagenen. I'm going to say Wagenen. He's the executive producer of Lucha Underground. He was on Steve Austin's podcast this week, and he confirmed there would be a second season of Lucha Underground, and that the El Rey Network wants them back for 40 episodes and says, you guys can start taping in October. So they have an offer on the table, but it's not for the money they're looking for, because they are apparently looking at all of their options. You would think if it was such a great deal, they would take it. Clearly, it's not that great of a deal. And the problem is that they have certain expectations as far as their production quality, their production value. It's a very well-shot, well-filmed show. It's part of the charm of Lucha Underground and what makes the show work. And I know it's a turnoff to some people. Some of you guys have said, look, I've tried. I just can't get into it. Part of it is the shooting style. I don't like it. And that's cool. Some people just don't dig that. I didn't dig it at first either, but I've gotten used to it and I've actually learned to like it because it's different. So they're looking at all of their options. And the guy, you know, he said, listen, that can include Netflix. That could include iTunes, DVDs. Partnering possibly with another network, which I assume would be Univision. I mean, if they can get on Univision, that's a game changer. That makes them automatically the number two wrestling company in the world. But again, they want to maintain their current shooting style, and they need money. They're bleeding money. They lost a ton of money on that first season. So they haven't decided what they're going to do yet. The offer, though, is there from El Rey. Now, how long the offer will be there for? Will El Rey pull the offer? I hope not. I don't think so. It's nice to have that to at least fall back on. Just knowing there will be a second season is a relief to me. But it's still very much up in the air what form that may take, what network that may be on. I know a lot of people like the Netflix idea. I do, too. Except, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about, let's say, putting the entire season, like all 40 episodes, on Netflix at once. I know that's how a lot of those shows work, which actually reminds me, I have to catch up on that Orange is the New Black show, which is actually pretty good. I didn't think I would like the show, but I do. I've watched the first two seasons. I haven't even gotten to season three yet. But I don't know. I feel like wrestling, you know, it's episodic. It's supposed to build from week to week, just kind of putting it all out there all at once. You know, even in terms of how I do these reviews, right? I review one show per week as they air. And so people don't, you know, aren't filled with spoilers and everything. And if you just put the whole season out there, I don't know how much I actually like that. But putting it on Netflix, I guess, would make it more widely available. That would be one of the big, you know, the big positives of that. So we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening. I at least feel better knowing that if all else fails, they could just go back to El Rey, even if that means they have to cut back a little bit on the production. I'd hate for them to have to do that, but it's better than no Lucha Underground at all. Let's get to the mailbag. Your questions. Email me, thesolomonster at gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We have got a bunch of questions to go through here. Noel from the Bronx. Which of these possible dream matches would you like to see at WrestleMania? Finn Balor against John Cena or Brock Lesnar against Kevin Owens? And why? There aren't many matches left I would consider dream matches. I would not call either one of those a dream match. I would love to see Lesnar versus Owens just for the spectacle of it. I'd love to see Brock try to German suplex Kevin Owens around the way he does everybody else. And it's not like Owens is going to be giving Brock a pop-up powerbomb, so how would he beat him? You know, I just think it would make for an intriguing match, and maybe more so, the promo battle. Imagine the promo war between Kevin Owens and Paul Heyman leading up to the match. For that reason alone, I would prefer Brock against Kevin Owens, but I don't really look at that as, you know, like a dream match. CJ from Marietta, Georgia. If WWE decides at some point to unify the U.S. and IC titles, but keeps the U.S. belt, what would you think about that? I grew up on the Intercontinental title. I think that belt looks a lot better than the U.S. title, like physically. So, as a matter of personal preference, I would prefer to keep the Intercontinental belt, but I would be fine with unifying them. I've pitched that idea many months ago. Brian getting hurt really screwed up their plans. I think they were heading toward a unification at SummerSlam with him and Cena. Cena with the open challenge stuff, he's really made that U.S. title something to watch. You look forward to these U.S. title matches now. And I think Brian could have done the same thing for the Intercontinental title if they had booked him the same way they booked John Cena. So I'd unify him and I would keep the Intercontinental title, which, you know, it flies in the face of what they've been doing because they've done such a good job of building up the U.S. title. Why would you then ditch the U.S. title? Again, it's a matter of personal preference. But the unification I would be fine with. They're not doing much of anything with the Intercontinental title right now. It feels almost pointless to even have that as a championship when you see what they're doing with Cena. And they prove you can make one of those secondary championships at least mean something. You can headline a show with that title. Nobody's buying a show or buying into even a Raw episode headlined by Ryback defending the Intercontinental title. Nobody. Not one person except maybe Ryback's mom. Okay, that's about it. Josh from Victorville. With Raw doing its lowest number of the year recently and the show being so stale ever since WrestleMania, although I am a big Brock Lesnar fan, do you think it's worth them paying him so much money on such a short schedule? Yes, he is an attraction, but with Raw doing low ratings, do you think that maybe they need to go in a different direction? With all the money they pay him, don't you think it could have been more worthwhile to go maybe to the Dudley Boys, Hardy Boys, or even Kurt Angle? Yes, they would probably not have a full schedule either, but I would imagine they would be seen way more often than Brock is on TV, and WWE would have more men on the roster. Also, do you think him being a babyface now will hurt his character even more than him being a heel? Quality over quantity. That's what I would say to you. One Brock Lesnar is worth a hell of a lot more to WWE right now than the Dudley Boys, the Hardy Boys, or Kurt Angle would. Not to mention, Kurt Angle should not even be wrestling now. Okay, Kurt Angle, maybe one or two matches per year at most at this point in his career. Brock Lesnar is going to wrestle way more matches than Kurt Angle should be wrestling. You know, Kurt even claimed WWE offered him a full-time deal, and he had to turn it down because his body couldn't handle it. You know, I bet WWE knows that. They know that. That's why they offered him the deal. They knew he would turn it down. WWE, they feel that Brock is worth it, and so do I. He's worth every penny. As far as him being a babyface, hurting him, I mean, is he really a babyface? The fans turned him. To the fans, he's a babyface. I don't see Brock himself doing anything any differently than he did before. You know, is he kissing babies and slapping hands with fans on the way to the ring? Just had Paul Heyman on TV this past week talking about him breaking The Undertaker's streak at WrestleMania, and the fans booed. their shtick is not any different than it was 6 months or a year ago. And then Heyman was, you know, talking about something else, and then they started cheering again. But it's not like the Heyman-Lesnar act is a babyface act. I don't think it hurts him at all, unless they start having him buddy up with the other babyfaces and become just another guy. For all the money they pay him, trust me, they will not make Brock Lesnar just another guy. It's amazing how motivated you can be to book someone a certain way when you're paying them a shitload of money. That's another reason why I don't have any problem at all with them paying Brock Lesnar a ton of money, even if you think it's more money than he deserves. It motivates them to do the right thing with him, as opposed to paying him what everybody else makes, because then he's just like everybody else. I don't want Brock Lesnar to be like everybody else. That's what makes the guy so special when he walks out on TV. When his theme music hits and people go out of their minds, there's a reason for that. And him getting that big money contract, I think, has a lot to do with that. Vinny from New Jersey, at what point do you think WCW passed the point of no return and there was no other possible end except going under? I know most people point to the finger poke of doom, but I still feel that it wasn't too late for them to turn it around at that point. I always felt that when the Radicals showed up in WWE, that spelled the end for WCW. Guerrero and Benoit, I felt, represented the younger talent that could replace the older guard as the top guys when that time came, and WCW letting them go was a blatant admission that they were never going to think about life after Hogan, Flair, etc. It was always going to be the same old guys at the top no matter what, and seeing them show up on WWE TV showed that WCW was officially circling the drain and there was no more life preservers left. You know, that's not too far off from my answer. I mean, you may be right. Jericho was kind of the first blow like that when he showed up, and then the Radicals showed up a few months later, all at the same time. I would argue it still could have been saved at that point. I think there was still a chance for them to survive at that point until April of 2000. That was when they brought back Eric Bischoff, they brought back Vince Russo, two guys who had already been out of the picture, and then out of desperation, they brought them back to work alongside each other, no less, which they had to know was never going to work. They being Bischoff and Russo, they just had to know that this was not going to work. And it didn't. And that same month is also when Russo put the WCW title on David Arquette. And that was it. That, to me, was the point of no return for WCW. After that, we saw the failed Goldberg heel turn. Oh, that was a great idea. We saw all of the shoot elements that Russo tried to incorporate into the product, the dumb angle with Hogan at Bash at the Beach that turned into a shoot, the stupid shit going into whatever pay-per-view it was with the remember that commercial? Goldberg refused to follow the script. What's gonna happen? And his whole feud with Vince Russo. You know, the Russo character on TV, it was nothing more. It was a low-rent version of Eric Bischoff in the NWO, and an even lower-rent version of Vince McMahon. A copy of a copy of a copy. They were done. They were finished at that point. There was no coming back from that. Michael from Lusk, Wyoming. Who was the better big man, Bam Bam Bigelow or the Big Boss Man? And between them, who do you think would have had a better chance of being WWF champion if pushed correctly? I like them both, especially Boss Man. I think Boss Man is one of the more underrated big men that there's ever been. And Bam Bam is one of the best big men, period. Not the best, but he's way up on that list. I've got to go with Bam Bam on this one. He'd be my pick. A lot of real star potential if they ever wanted to push him to the top. I think making him a babyface when he first came in, I think it was 87 when he first showed up in WWE. I think that was probably a mistake, especially putting Oliver Humperdinck with him. You know, Bam Bam could have been a monster heel. You know, getting main events with Hogan. I mean, look, as a kid, I didn't know any better. Oh, look, it's the guy with the flames on his outfit. You know, and I used to play him as a character in the first video game they ever had. Was it WrestleMania? Whatever that first video game was, he was in it, and you know, he was a character on the show. I never looked at him as like a big star because he was never positioned as a big star. Hulk Hogan was the big star, and Andre the Giant, and the Macho Man, and the Million Dollar Man. Even as a kid, I never looked at Bam Bam on that level because he was never positioned that way. And he also wasn't there long enough. But now I look back on it, and I look at some of those big guys that they pushed as main eventers in WWE. And I say to myself, Bigelow could have been a monster heel getting main events with Hogan if they played their cards right. King Kong Bundy got a WrestleMania main event with Hulk Hogan just for being big. And Bundy could hardly do shit in the ring. Great promo guy. I love Bundy's promos. Bam Bam Bigelow, he wasn't quite as big as Bundy was, but he was still a big dude. He could work. But they made him Hogan's buddy instead. Right? That's what they did on TV. It was on Hogan's Survivor Series team. And then when he came back to WWE in 92-93, they gave him a little push as a heel. They could have put the title on him then too if they wanted to, and they opted not to. They went with Yokozuna instead. But the matches that Bam Bam had with Bret Hart in 93 were great. They could have feuded for the championship easily. I still love that match they had in the King of the Ring that year, the finals of the tournament. That was a great match. And then a few months later, there he is, feuding with Doink and getting water dumped on his head. I mean, they obviously trusted him in the ring. They trusted him enough to pick him as Lawrence Taylor's opponent at WrestleMania 11. That was a big deal. I'm sure that was a huge thrill for him to wrestle LT and to get a WrestleMania main event and a WrestleMania payday out of it. He made LT look about as good as anybody probably could have made him look. But I guess they never saw any money in him as far as being like a draw on top. I'm not really sure why. There were far less talented big guys that drew money wrestling Hogan on top back in the day. But then again, a lot of them could barely move or could do anything in the ring. And so almost by default, it made Hogan look good. Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe, you know, Bigelow might outshine Hulk Hogan. Oh, we can't have that. I mean, would you ask yourself that question. Would you really be surprised if that had something to do with it? Whether that was something that came from Hogan because he was jealous, or if it came from Vince and WWF just not wanting to put Hogan in the ring with somebody who might upstage him. I think that was kind of the issue with Jake the Snake, right? That's one of those famous stories where they filmed a Snake Pit segment back in 86 at one of the Superstars tapings that never... Actually, I take that back. It did air on TV in, I think, a local market like Rhode Island or something. But it hasn't been seen since, and nobody has any video of it online. It's never been seen again. It's in the vault. It's locked away in the vault somewhere. Because at the end of the segment, Jake gave Hogan a DDT, and the people popped. And so the fear, not even just from WWE, I'm sure from Hogan's end, was, shit, if I work a program with this guy's going to get over. And the people are going to boo me and they're going to cheer him, and we can't have that. They did a very good job in those early years in the 80s of protecting Hogan. They reached a point eventually where, you know, like 92, Hogan was already kind of past that point of being like a top guy that everybody loved, and they cheered when he got dumped out of the Royal Rumble that year. But maybe that had something to do with it. You know, Bam Bam, as good as he was, maybe he would outshine Hogan, and they just didn't want that to happen. And Kevin from Cali. Watching the SummerSlam 97 main event between Undertaker and Bret Hart made me realize how important this match really was for wrestling in general. HBK hit Undertaker with a chair, allowing Bret to win the title and causing a beef with Undertaker. 2 months later, Bret gets screwed and leaves the company. Shawn Michaels and Undertaker feud until Royal Rumble, where he injures his back on the casket, causing him to drop the title at WrestleMania to Stone Cold. Long story short, the events from this SummerSlam match single-handedly allowed wrestling to put stars like Stone Cold, Triple H, Mankind, and Rock on the big stage right away. Without the chair shot that caused Bret to win, he would have stayed, because the Montreal Screwjob would not have happened, meaning Stone Cold probably would not have won the belt at WrestleMania, and The Rock may have ended up staying in the IC division with Triple H. The Rock went from not even wrestling at that Survivor Series to becoming the heavyweight champion the next year. I point to this match as the staple that took WWE places that we will never see again. Okay, so let's backtrack a little bit here. To say that this match single-handedly made Austin, Rock, Triple H, and Foley instant main event stars the year after, that's taking an awfully big leap. So let's not do that. Okay, it helped, but we can't say it was the single thing responsible for that. We have no way of knowing. All or most of those guys would have ended up as top stars anyway a year later, even if Bret and Shawn were still on top, which they would not have been. Bret was gone, regardless of the outcome of Survivor Series. It's not like if the outcome of the SummerSlam match is different, Bret stays. No, Bret doesn't stay. So that's wrong. Bret was gone regardless because he negotiated a deal with Eric Bischoff based on Vince McMahon telling Bret Hart flat out, I cannot pay you on your deal. I cannot afford to pay you. I'm going to breach your contract and give you permission to negotiate with WCW. That happens whether Bret is champion or not. In fact, if Bret is not the champion, I would say it's just as likely because you're paying all this money to this guy and he's not even your champion. Vince told him that and he was his champion. So does Montreal happen the way it did if Bret doesn't get the belt? No. Because if the title isn't part of the equation, then Montreal doesn't happen. That's true. So maybe Bret does his 3 years in WCW and then he comes back to the WWE on good terms. But, you know, then again, if he gets hurt, if he still gets kicked in the head by Goldberg, then it's a moot point. But it wouldn't have been such an acrimonious split. It's very possible that that's the way that that goes down. Bret wrestles for WCW and comes back as the returning hero to WWE. But you are right in that that main event caused some very big repercussions for that company. You could say that entire show did. I mean, look what happened in the Austin-Owen Hart match, right? Austin got dropped on his head and probably had at least 5 years taken off his career because of it. If he doesn't get dropped on his head, there's no way that match with Rock at WrestleMania 19 is his last match. If that match even happens at all. So that was a pretty important show, I would say. If Undertaker keeps the championship, I mean, there's a good chance he'd have dropped it to Shawn Michaels a month or two after that anyway, but maybe then they don't have that casket match at the Royal Rumble. And Shawn doesn't get hurt, doesn't break his back. Even if Austin still wins the title at WrestleMania 14, if that happens, Shawn Michaels sticks around. I mean, you know he's going to get his rematch, if nothing else. You know he's getting the belt back at some point. Shawn Michaels in the Attitude Era. I mean, that would have been very interesting. Probably very destructive to the Attitude Era. There's also a good chance that Shawn Michaels would not be alive today. That's how destructive his own life was at that time. Triple H had to be his minder. Triple H was his babysitter because he was always so drugged up. Getting hurt and taking time off may have been the best thing that ever happened to him. It probably saved his life. He met his wife. He found Jesus. He had a couple of kids. I don't think that would have ended too well for him otherwise. So yes, the booking of that match led to certain things happening that changed the business, but I don't think you can say that it was single-handedly responsible for Austin and all those guys becoming stars the very next year. Now, I suppose you could say that maybe Rock would not have won the world title at Survivor Series when he did in that Deadly Game tournament if Shawn Michaels was still wrestling. And Rock, you know, Shawn Michaels was not somebody Rock wanted to work with, which would have made things even more interesting. The story was always that Rock and Triple H, Shawn Michaels. Here's the other element to all this. Talk about playing politics. The story was always that Shawn Michaels and Triple H tried to convince Vince McMahon not to put the championship on The Rock when they did. Or that he should not be the one in the WrestleMania 15 main event in 99 against Austin. They tried to, they lobbied for Mick Foley, for Mankind, to be the one to defend against Austin, because if you remember, the title went back and forth a whole bunch of times that early part of 99 between Rock and Mankind, right? Rock was champ, Mankind won, lost it back to Rock, Rock lost it back to him, he lost it back to Rock. They played hot potato for about 2 months there with that championship. So they were lobbying at one point for Mick to keep the title and for him to be the one to defend against Austin at WrestleMania. And Vince thankfully stuck to his guns. And Austin and Rock also went to bat for Jim Ross, and they got, you know, they convinced Vince to bring back Jim Ross for that main event because Jim Ross had just suffered a Bell's palsy attack 2 months before. Michael Cole did that whole pay-per-view except the main event. So there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes at that point. If Shawn Michaels was politicking while he was not wrestling, which he clearly was, I would imagine it would have been far worse if he was still an in-ring performer at that time. Probably a lot worse. That's why I say I think it would have been destructive, probably more than constructive for the Attitude Era. In some ways, it would have been interesting. It would have been cool. I think Shawn, with his attitude back then, would have fit right in. But I think it would have been more bad than good for all those other guys. It's time for Buy or Sell. I took a buy or sell suggestion this week from one of our readers, Khalif from Philadelphia. This is what he had to say. Buy or sell, Kane or Minoru Suzuki Maybe the only time, by the way, you'll ever hear the names Kane and Minoru Suzuki mentioned in the same breath. He says both guys are close to 50 years old, but show no signs of slowing down. Kane still works TVs, pay-per-views, house shows, while Suzuki has added pro wrestling Noah shows while still doing New Japan shows as well. Suzuki recently became the GHC champion for pro wrestling Noah, while Kane is regularly seen in WWE main events. Buy or sell? I'm afraid if I say Kane, Minoru may find me and kill me. The answer is Suzuki. I usually enjoy Kane's little backstage promos where he shits on Seth Rollins. Kane constantly in the main events, though, I'm selling that all day long. Sell, sell, sell. I don't need to see Kane in another main event as long as I live. I do like Kane. I've said before, I think he's someone you'll miss more when he's gone. I think it's pretty amazing that the guy is 48 years old and he's still wrestling a full-time schedule. Every other guy at his age and his position, his seniority, they're wrestling part-time, if they're wrestling at all. A lot of those guys aren't even wrestling anymore. This guy's 48. He's still out there doing a full-time schedule. All the TVs, all the pay-per-views, all the house shows. He just went to Japan and wrestled in the main event there. And all for a guy who's almost 7 feet tall. He's like a legit 6'9", whatever he is. He's a big guy. Usually on those big guys, the knees are the first thing to go. And this guy is not only working a full-time schedule, he's still climbing to the top rope and jumping off the top rope. He hasn't had very many serious injuries. I mean, I remember him being gone in like 02 for like a bicep tear. I remember that because he made his big comeback in Madison Square Garden. I think it was the Un-Americans were about to like take a blowtorch to the American flag and out came Kane. And everybody was all happy and then they had him do a freaking spin-a-rooney. But he hasn't really been gone for long stretches of time for major injuries. He's been pretty durable as far as like big guys and top guys, you know, Attitude Era guys go, which is also pretty amazing when you think about it. It defies logic. But Minoru Suzuki is just so much fun to watch. I don't get to watch him, obviously, as often as I do Kane, although that's not by personal preference. He's still killing it in the ring. When I watch his matches, he's got that badass vibe to him when he comes out. Like, this is going to be a different kind of match. And it's just fun to watch him. And he's been doing this since, you know, the late 80s. I can't buy on either guy with the idea that they've got many more years left ahead of them. They're a lot closer to the end of their run than they are the beginning of their run. But if I'm buying on them right now at this exact moment, I know Kane is still a headliner in WWE and maybe making more money and all that. Suzuki really isn't. In New Japan he isn't. But I've got to go with Minoru Suzuki over Kane. I'll buy on Minoru and sell on Kane. And we'll end with this. This week's stupid shit tweeted by TNA Award goes to Josh Matthews. On Wednesday, Josh was answering a fan question about JBL. Called JBL one of the worst human beings he's ever had the displeasure of meeting. And in response, somebody tweeted to Josh, "You're mad because Renee Young took your job and you couldn't cut it as a wrestler or a commentator for WWE. #sourgrapes. To which Josh Matthews, the professional that he is, replied, and I quote, "You're a fucking idiot," end quote. Someone sent me a link to the tweet, which is the only reason I even was aware of this. And then Josh deleted the tweet shortly thereafter. Yet another tweet and delete by a member of the TNA roster. I'm not even defending the guy who was talking shit to Josh Matthews. It was kind of a dick thing for him to say. I probably would have wanted to say the same thing to this guy that Josh did. Believe me, I've wanted to say the same thing to plenty of people. But I don't even work for TNA, and I show restraint by not doing that. This guy is the lead announcer. He's the face of TNA, a company that just had one or two other people. Eric Young was one of them. Who was the other? I don't remember. I know there was another TNA person who dropped an F-bomb on somebody. I forget who. We just went through this, and Eric Young took his tweet down also and had to apologize for it. Tweet and delete should be the new TNA slogan. Someone give these people a Twitter intervention because they are in desperate need of it. Dixie Carter. I have to mention this too. Dixie Carter sent a tweet. This was hilarious. She sent a tweet in reply to somebody who asked her if it's true that Bram has re-signed a new contract with TNA. Which, by the way, I can announce to you that Bram, as of about an hour ago, has in fact signed a multi-year contract with TNA, so we can all rest easy now. But the person asked her, is it true that Bram re-signed a new contract with TNA? And then they put LOL at the end of their tweet. Because who on Twitter has not by now heard that joke a million times? Well, I know one person who hasn't, and thy name is Dixie Carter, who responded with, yes, he recently signed a long-term contract. Why is that so funny? I can't think of a better way to shut this show down than with that. There's no topping it. If you have a suggestion for sad tweet, or as I called it this week, stupid bullshit tweeted by TNA, feel free to tweet it at me or email me, let me know about it, and I may use your suggestion here on the show. Same goes for buy or sell, and any other questions you may have, you can always email me, thesolemonster at gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at solemonster is my handle. And don't forget, we have a pro wrestling tee store, prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff. We have 20 different t-shirts up in the store, all different designs for you to choose from, up to size 5XL on each and every one of those shirts. So unless you're Godzilla or something, believe me, there is a shirt that will fit you. And we ship all over the world, no matter where you are. It's another great way to support the show. Please head on over if you haven't already done so. Check out what we got. If you want to buy it as a gift for somebody, I've had a few people do that. They bought it as birthday gifts for other fans of the show or wrestling fans if they think there's a funny design, whatever the case may be. So prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff is the direct address for our store. And you can pay via PayPal, you can pay via credit card, whatever works for you. Of course, you can also support the show with a PayPal donation on thesolemonster.com. You can sign up using our Audible link, audibletrial.com/solemonster, to get your free audiobook. Lots of different ways to support this podcast. Chief among them, the best way, at the end of the day, keep spreading the good word. Let people know about the Sound Off, other wrestling fans. I've had non-fans who actually like listening to this show. They can't believe half the shit actually happens in wrestling. The stuff they hear on this podcast. It's true. I'm not making any of it up. I wish I was sometimes, but I'm not. So please keep spreading the good word of the Sound Off, and we will be back next weekend with episode 392 on our march to 400. We'll have predictions for Battleground and all the other late-breaking news. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. I very much appreciate it and hope that you will be back for more next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
Since 2007, The Solemonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster Sound Off.